Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle live. I told you yesterday about my computer fiasco, and our sound was not so great. So hopefully today we are going to do a lot better. All right, so let me ask you a couple of questions here. Have you asked yourself again? Excuse me. Have you asked yourself again, who do you trust? And let me rephrase that and ask you to ask yourself, have you thought about the fact that you weren't on the list when you gave that answer? Have you thought in your own head, wow, I don't trust myself? What do I do to trust myself? What does that even mean? I've never done it before. Lots of women out there, lots of people out there think or assume, or if they're asked, they just never have considered. Of course they trust themselves. They are who, but when they have to just say it, lay it out on the table, they don't find that they are on that list. The only way to be on that list is not to think, oh, I'm great or I'm smart. The only way you can be on your own list is by developing your core. We talked about that a little bit yesterday. Developing the core you. The only way to develop the core you is to recognize, number one, that you have been defined by every other human in your life. You may have gone to church, you may have knows that there's a God, know that you've got a destiny, know you have a purpose, waiting for that purpose, waiting to have that aha moment. I have been to many. Well, let me back up. Many can mean a lot of things. I have been to probably at least a half dozen in the year since my reconversion. I've been to maybe a half dozen, maybe more, of healing services and pledge services and people that are doing great things in other countries. And I've been appalled many times because the initiating introduction is by giving testimony stories, not on someone developing their core, becoming more of who they are and who they are meant to be as they get involved. But it is in that if they take this path, if they partake in this mission or they go to this particular service, they give testimony stories of people who didn't all of a sudden go to a mailbox and see $5,000 or all of a sudden get that job offer. Now, those things all do happen, and we all know the Mother Angelica story. And those things do happen. It is the very thing when I've prayed certain times in my life where I've said, you know, I've got to have something. throw me a bone here, God. And then boom, in just a very short period of time, I'll get a phone call or I'll get, this will happen. Now does God say, okay, Michelle, and then just go ahead and sprinkle some kind of dust over onto somebody and cause them to call me? Well, I think it's as Father Bernie Weber, now deceased, God rest his soul, called it, the divine setup. I think that a lot of forces, I heard someone say once when they were talking about their spouse, someone wrote a little book, and I wish I could remember the name for you. It's a real tiny pamphlet. It was about waiting for a spouse. And this person, it was a husband and wife who wrote it together, and how they were on different areas of the planet in different situations, very different professions, very different lifestyles. But each of them knew that somewhere, someone was being molded and formed through the process of their own life and their own mistakes and their own road that would eventually be the person for them. And they really believe this, and they also augmented it and supplemented it with a lot of prayer and a lot of willingness to learn about themselves. But when I look back and I see this, each of them had a good sense core of who they were. They didn't wait for Prince Charming or Princess Charming to just show up and make them feel good. They developed themselves. Each one of them was eyes inward, eyes to God, eyes to the grindstone of life. And not in a bad grindstone makes it sound like, oh, this was so tough. But they developed themselves. They had a passion for something. They developed that passion. I think one was a pilot and one was a doctor. Very unlikely couple to ever meet. But they approached things in not only a faithful way, but also from a way where they had themselves a core. That's what they developed first. You can't have a chair to sit on unless you take a big old tree and you fine-tune it and you carve out what you want and you carve out something over here and then you reassemble it. So you're actually reassembling the tree, only you're making it into a chair. So these are really, these are things I want to bring up to you today. I want to talk to you more about your core. And I'm going to do a lot of looking at other resources right now. We talked a little bit about the book, Your Faith Has Made You Well. And I put a link up there yesterday. So if you want to go to, if you have the iTunes app, which I would suggest you all get, you can certainly log on to and scroll down to some archives. That would be great. If you want to just log on to breadboxmedia.podbean.com, that's good too. So we have all these resources for you. If you want to call, you can, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. How did you go from being a vaporous person to being a core? Do you always have a strong core of self, or did you somehow arrive at the fact that you thought you had a good core, but really you didn't even have one at all? Or something in your life shook you up so much that you began to constantly have your eyes scanning the horizon, looking for danger, looking for hurts, looking for harm. And I don't mean that indictively. I mean you're on the lookout, out of protection. Or perhaps you have lived so long in whoever you were, even though you may not have been completely, you may not have been abused in any way, shape, or form, but it was pretty obvious to you that who you were, your desire, maybe you liked to dance, maybe you were a great little artist, but the family culture was such that you had to be a mathematician, or you had to be a fireman, or these things just kind of got indoctrinated into the family, that you would be betraying the family did you not go into the family line, the family culture said you needed to. And so you either didn't break out of that, and you might be successful, but something in you has lost its core. So you want to look at, how do you get back to your core? How do you allow that core to become solid while at the same time it is growing? How do you shed the old skins that you don't need any longer? How do you keep God in the mix of that? And as always, everything I'm telling you will have a mental and physical effect. There's no way it cannot have a mental and physical effect. And the whole reason that we, and again, I'm going to go before we end on this particular segment, I want to remind you, and I want to keep reminding you, we are supposed to be using others. We are supposed to be contacting others as touchstones in life. Just look inside the church. That's why you have a church. You have God inside of you. You have a desire to know God. You could just go off in your merry way. You have to have touchstones. That's how we're formed. When you are just two cells that came together, the only way you go to be the next one and the next one is a pressure. The growth causes a pressure, which causes another growth, which causes another pressure, which causes another growth. And pretty soon, you have four cells and then six cells. And that's all you have. That's you, but that's all you have. And then it keeps differentiating, differentiating. And the pressure causes, it is all a physiological need. So just like when you have a seed in the ground, it needs that pressure to push through that earth. It's going to make a difference in you. So you need to have other people touchstoning you. You need to have someone to say, oh, that looks a little renegade to me, or yeah, you're on the right path, or let's go a little bit into your past. And as I said in the last couple days, we don't want to dwell there. We don't want to live there. We don't want to spend years and years, you know, sloshing around in the mire of our past. But running away from the past, thinking that you've dealt with it when you have not, that can be problematic too, because it's necessary to be able to view what has occurred to you in order for you to really get back to your own core. This is Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You are listening to me on Dr. Michelle Live, and I have to apologize. The sound is not going to be good again today. We have had a little bit of a problem. I've had to use a different computer since my debacle, my tripping over the dog debacle, and my laptop debacle, and we're just not getting a good sound. My headphones just aren't going to be doing it. So thank you for being patient. Where are we now? We are talking about getting that core. All right, so let's switch gears, and let's go to the Saint who I love and who's new to me, St. Josephine Bakhita. You've all heard me talk about her before. So she was born in 1869, and I'm going to, I got just a little synopsis of her over the internet, so I'm going to read to you just a bit. She was born in 1869. It was actually unrecorded completely because she was born in the Sudan, Africa, and she was just a child of, I think, several other children in a tribe in Africa. She died February 8th, 1947, at 78 years of age, and she died in Italy. Well, how did she get from the Sudan to Italy? Now listen to your children, listen to your childhood, listen to yourself, and think about her life here. So at one point, Josephine Bakita, at 9 years of age, was captured. Bakita actually means, in Arabic, the fortunate one, or meaning fortunate, or the lucky one. And someone had given that name to her, and perhaps as a sarcastic name. Because when she was taken at 9 years of age, she was sold into slavery. And the slavery that she was sold into was every kind you can imagine. So she was sold into sexual slavery, into domestic slavery, and she was sold over and over again. She was physically mutilated by some of her owners. And she was beaten. She had something like 144 large scars over her body. She had parts of her mutilated a lot, without anesthetic, of course, just for someone else's fun. She was sold at one point to someone in Italy. I'm paraphrasing, actually, right now. It's just her story. She was sold to someone in Italy. Again, she's just being sold, and she's starting out as nine. Now, she didn't even know her name. She could not. She had so much trauma. At 9 years old, if you have a nine-year-old child or ever had a child who was nine, you'll know, or go around any nine-year-old, they know their name. And they don't forget their name. She forgot her name because of the trauma. Now, where's herself? Her core is not there. As a person, as a child of God, it is. Her trauma caused her to lose that core temporarily. Lose that core. She had to, in order to survive, do and be whatever her masters demanded. So she, at some point, was a shell of a human being. So at some point, she was sold. And she was actually, wasn't a child at that point. She was, I think, a young woman when she was sold to a general, I think it was, in Italy. And this general's wife, I can't remember whether she had died then or whether she was living. I think she was living. They had children, and the wife needed some help, and they bought her. And they weren't particularly nice to her, but they certainly weren't the hideous ghouls and monsters that she had previously. Because she was worse than just cattle. They treated their cattle better than they treated her, because they looked at cattle as something necessary and with respect. Here it was, she was nothing. She was less than nothing. So when she was in Italy, she actually had a family, and she was actually asked to be with this family and to caretake one of the daughters, who was supposedly very out of control, just very spoiled and very bratty and kind of nasty and very entitled. And they had money, and now she had this servant who had been a slave. And so she ends up with this young girl. The young girl treats her rather not so nicely, just kind of, but not badly. And there's a point where the general needs to go off to a different country. And so he and his wife decide that they're going to take Josephine and their daughter, and they're going to put them in a convent for a while they're gone. And so Josephine went to this convent, and I think it was the convent they went to. In whatever form she was able to do this, she was pretty much the caretaker of this young daughter while it was something of the day that they did in the 1800s in Europe. So the rich could do that. They could leave their children for a while. They were fine with that. They go off and do what they have to do, and then they will come back, and then they usually keep the servant with them. So at some point when they all got back, and during that time, Josephine Bakita was introduced to Jesus and God and nuns and everything else. And she didn't want to leave. There was a point, as it said in this one little article, it said, after only having been away for 9 months, Maria Michelli returned to Italy to collect her daughter and Bikita and bring them to their new establishment. However, Bikita had grown so fond of the saintly and patient sisters that she could not bear to leave them. Despite truly loving the Michellis and having never disobeyed them, she refused to leave the convent. Maria attempted legal measures to force Bikita to follow them. But as slavery was supposedly illegal anyhow, she had no recourse. Painfully, Bikita separated herself from the family she had certainly grown to love. It was in that holy house of religious life that Bikita truly got to know God. It was he whom, quote, she had experienced in her heart without knowing who he was, unquote, since she was a child. Seeing, quote, now we're quoting her, seeing the sun, the moon, and the stars, I said to myself, who could be the master of these beautiful things? And I felt a great desire to see him, to know him, and to pay him homage. Okay, so why do I read that to you? I read that to you, and I find her such a multidimensional saint, because she embodies and is the epitome of a powerful woman. She's a powerful woman. Here, this little girl who's so traumatized that she loses her ability to even recall her own name, who is physically mutilated and tortured, sold over and over and over again as a worthless piece of cloth. She gets with a family who treats her fairly well, comparatively, and she grows to love them, and they grow to love her after some time. And that part in her, she said, she had experienced, this was her quote, that she had experienced in her heart without knowing who he was. So she, as a young child, experienced God. She knew he was there somewhere. He may have been unavailable to her. He may have been as distant as anything. She didn't have someone in the background whispering in her ear, oh, there's a God, just hang on. She knew he was there somewhere, and it wasn't until by a set of God coincidences, the divine setup, that over a long period of time, she finds herself in a convent because she has to be there. That's what they did in Europe. If they would have been going to a government housing project, she would have gone there. But here, they would just give them to convents for a while. You keep them for a while, and then they would give money to the convent. And the family liked her, wanted her. She did wonders with the daughter. And then that strength in Bikita, can you imagine all she knew? And she went through legal measures, even though it killed her inside, because she wanted to stay. And she didn't want to leave that family. It's the only family she ever had. And the only place she wasn't treated horribly. And she had a huge connection with that daughter. And with no ability to ever have a family of her own, physically or otherwise. And here she decides, this is where I need to stay. I don't know what went through her head. But in the 1800s, a slave going to seek out legal matters so that she doesn't go back to the family, a rich and powerful family, respected family who treated her well, that's pretty darn awesome. So we should take that in our hearts as an example of a woman who is not afraid to reveal her core. Your core is not lost. Just like they tell me my abs aren't lost. I don't believe them, but they tell me that. But it's a matter of revealing them, building them up, and they will show themselves. That's the same with your core. That's what happened with Bikita. And the great part about all of this is she didn't have to create something out of nothing. God already implanted that inside of her. All she had to do was develop it. We're going to talk more about this and you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. We are having a few little technical difficulties. However, I think we're going to get those going just fine. And hopefully my sound, hopefully you're hearing me right now. And I'm going to take just a second to ask Lennon, are you hearing me? Yes, he says, I'm good. All right, so that's awesome. All right, so this is, you know, you just have to persevere. And as I'm reading about Josephine Bakita, I am thinking, my goodness, you know, what the heck am I, you know, I get so irritated so fast that, you know what, okay, we got other problems going on here. So, anyway. Let me see here. All right. Okay. I apologize. Maybe we can get this edited out before it gets on the podcast. But those of you who are listening live, well, you know what? Thank you for bearing with me. I am just, I'm inundated with little icons and things popping up all over the place. And I am ready to pull out some of my very unruly hair, but and here I am reading about Bakita and her 144 scars and how to develop your core. So here we are. It's my test. All right. So getting back to this core, the core that you need to have. How do you do it? How did she do it? Well, you know what? For Bakita, as she said, she would always praise him. It's quoted as saying, from those who observed her, once that she became a nun, I mean, she became a nun as a grown woman. And once she became a nun, she did not only do her duties of her convent, is that she was committed to telling her story, to speaking out. We have to tell our stories. We have to speak out. We have to do this. Because if we don't, we are still captive. We're still slaves. We're still allowing that mutilation of God's beautiful gift to the earth. And the whole time she's up there, I don't know if you've ever had a scar. I'm sure some of you have, whether it's from, you know, anything, a scar or burn. You know that when you stretch that, you can feel the tug when you stretch that area because it's scar tissue. Well, she had these huge keloid scars on her back and all over her place, I mean, off front. Everywhere you can imagine, she had some kind of mutilation. So she had to physically work through that. And look at us, you know. I mean, I'm getting to the point where I'm going to complain for a second. We won't call it complaining. But after you reach a certain age, and I'm telling you, I don't care what age it is, because I've listened to a 19-year-old telling me about this. I've listened to a 23-year-old saying these things, a 30-year-old, and then in the more understandable 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. But the concept of a preconceived notion that you are destined to have aches and pains and failures, and if you don't do something and you're not a star in one way or another, by the time you're 13, you're washed up. And you will always be able to see on the internet, anywhere you go, somebody who's a little tiny kid who's just already so accomplished that they're packing in the concert hall. Well, that's great for them.
there weren't a lot of Mozarts when Mozart was Mozart, you know? He was five when he was playing for the courts. Great. That's not you. That's not me. That was him. And we get to look at him and listen to him to this day and be filled with joy. And he didn't have the easiest life. And he wasn't, you know, always the best. If you look a little bit at his life, you know, he wasn't just this guy who just fulfilled God's every single beauty moment. He had this driving talent. And with this driving talent came a lot of challenges and a lot of problems and a lot of self-doubt and a lot of issues. And a lot of competition. And he didn't even have a childhood. So that caused some problems in his personal life. But we're not talking about those things now. What we're talking about is don't preconceive where you're at. If you're 38 years old and you're Catholic and you're divorced and you have kids and one of them has an eating disorder or is shaving their heads or has all kinds of piercings or whatever it is, and you need to retool your home and retool your thinking, do not let the world define you as a failure, as a bad mother, as a mess, as someone who made all the wrong decisions. You made your bed, now you got to lie in it. Well, you know what? You made your bed, but you don't have to lie in it. You made your bed, and you have to be responsible and take accountability for things that have occurred in your life because of choices. But sometimes, just like I told you the other day, when you look at one of the reasons for annulment of a marriage, I'm using this as an analogy. Some of the reasons for annulling a marriage are that you didn't have all the information to make a good informed decision. So if you can't make a good informed decision in life, if you are 16 and you're pregnant and you have, you know, fears and parents and all kinds of things around you, and you choose to have an abortion, and then later you're 30 with a child or two children, or you can't have children, and it's killing you inside. Well, you can't keep going back there and be 16 in your brain all the time over and over and beating yourself up for being such a bad child. You did whatever you did at the moment you did it. And sometimes people do them for very bad reasons, and sometimes people do them, I mean, I doubt too many people go there because they just hate the baby. No, they do it out of either a certain intention, a fear, direction, trusting their boyfriend, trusting their husband, trusting their parents, trusting a teacher. And you may live with regrets, but this cannot define you. So you may have made that bed, but you can walk away from that bed and get to a new life and get a new bed and make a new bed and then lie in that one. That's what I want you to do. That's what I want us to do. We need to do that. You need to do that. If you don't, you'll just keep going back to the same little dusty bed. It's like, who is that woman? Mrs. Havisham, I think her name was, in Great Expectations, written by Charles Dickens. It was the woman who's, I think he was a soldier or somebody, her betrothed left her on the altar, and she locked herself up in an upstairs room, and when her same wedding gown with the same wedding table, all set with the same rotting food, with cobwebs and rats and everything else, and she just stayed there. And that is not where we want to be. You do not want to stay. Bikita did not stay locked in with that first Sudanese slaver. She didn't want to stay there. She was traumatized, and she relived those traumas. And she felt the stretch of those scars every time she put on a dress or moved or did anything. She finally had a connection to human beings and the purity of children and a couple right in front of her of the day that did what richer people of the day did in Italy. May not be what we would think would be great today for the kids, but that's what they did. What beauty and security could that be from someone who had her history? I told you before, the YouTube on the in human trafficking of the woman at the Bunny Ranch who was in, who was a prostitute, who said, you know, when she remembers, like, because she'd been sold into slavery, and she remembers thinking, they pay for this? Rather than her being beaten, chained, starved, and drugged and forced. She just couldn't believe it. To her, it was like she'd died and gone to heaven. She didn't understand the morality of it all, but that's the same idea. We can't even get our minds around it, those of us who have not lived that or walked those shoes, that compared to the atrocities that happened to a little person all throughout their growing up, over and over and over again. And even if you could get used to the atrocities and with one person, you get sold for new atrocities. All of a sudden to be sold to someone who treats you like a human and gives you a place to sleep and it gives you children to help nurture. I mean, really, she had to be incredibly brave. But why? Because she didn't go back and live in that old graveyard. She kept that, she nurtured and revealed that core in her that had been given to her from birth. And she wanted to spread that so that what happened to her would not happen to others. Well, this is Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break. And I hope we have all of our little sound situations take care of. See you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live. Thank you for being patient. I've been so thrown for loops here with all kinds of auditory and visual stimulus just like flashing at me and flashing in my ears. And but the manifestation of it has been that we didn't have a good sound for you all. So just thanks. Thanks for following me on this journey here. It's like going into an unpredictable snowstorm or something. All right. So my whole point in going with Josephine Bikita is talking about the core, your core. You need to refine your core. You need to reveal your core. You've got it. You've never not had it. That's just the way it is. You've never not had it. It's just that sometimes it gets beaten out of you. It gets coerced out of you. It gets misguided out of you. People, well-meaning people, they don't see the bright star in front of them. They just see someone who's unruly and they're afraid. Parents do this all the time. Are you doing this with your kids? Parents do this all the time. They see there's a bright star in front of them who's a little different. They want to sit and draw all day long, or they fidget a little bit too much, but maybe not too much. Who's defining too much? They're not pathologically bouncing off the walls, or they have a high need for exercise, or they're mathematical brains, and they're designing little mathematical things in their heads or on paper. All kinds of things. There's a beautiful story in, it wasn't The Little Prince. It was the author, remember the book, The Little Prince? It was his other book. But it was a beautiful scene where the protagonist is sitting in a boxcar, not a boxcar, a train car. As they traveled in those days, in the turn of the 20th century, in the 1900s. And he's sitting there, and he's in Europe, and he's going somewhere in Europe, and he's in the peasant class, what was called the peasant class, or the, it's where the people kind of crammed in, you know, it's not where they, it's, it was the poor people. And he saw this, he described them not very charitably, this couple. The man was just craggly and kind of a mess, and the woman was kind of craggly and a mess, and they were, you know, not really talking to each other. And she was holding this little baby, and he was saying, you know, this baby is going to be the product. He was looking, he was lamenting. Now, I don't, I'm not buying into what he said. I mean, it was beautiful because he brought up something, and the protagonist was thinking this. So I want to go the extra step and give the hope, because it doesn't have to be this way. But he was looking at this baby, and he thought, and he was narrating about how this baby was going to be a product of those two people, that culture. They will tell him who he will be. They will define him. But he might be a baby Mozart, and they will never know. They might not be able to appreciate that in him. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that for you, you were that baby. I was that baby. And your babies are that baby. We all have ideas of what we think is the best for our children. And if we stay with our core, and if we stay with some really good principles, and I'm telling you, some of those principles, I mean, we used to make fun of them as kids, you know, in Proverbs. Some of those principles, they aren't, these principles that come down throughout the ages, they're not new stuff. We didn't just discover it. Just like we didn't just discover that we have babies. You know, we just, it's something that is part of living, part of being human, was how to nurture the next generation. And it's very difficult in this intellectual age that we're living in, where it's all in the head, and now there is no core. We're not allowed to have a core. It's beaten out of us. It's coerced out of us. It's well-intentioned out of us. It is a product of many years of having self-sufficiency taken away. We can't fix our cars. We can't even open our cars if our car doesn't want us to open it. There's so many different things. So we have to say, all right, we are not going to change that. I'm not going to change what happened to your life or your marriage or your upbringing, and I'm not going to change somebody else's either. I'm not going to change my own. But what we can do now is what they call change now, but we're not really changing. We're discarding the lies that we've put on, like overcoats and underwear and, you know, sweaters. You can take them off. This is what Bikita is telling us. Now, we do not get the luxury of being completely, to the end of days, free of the scars. So we always have to be on guard that they're not, because they're like, they're voices from the graveyard. They're like, oh, come on back here. Come on back here. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Because it hurts, and it can, we want to make sense of it, and we want to, and sometimes that's the only thing we know. So it's comfort. There are people, there are slaves who, instead of being excited on liberation, didn't want to be liberated. Because what else would they do? And I'm not judging that. Perhaps they had in their minds a very good setup and relationship. Or maybe, you know, who knows? So you don't take one group of people and just judge them all. Every individual is dealing with their particular place in time. So we have Amos 3:7, surely the Lord God does nothing without revealing his secret to his servants, the prophets. And then in Jeremiah, I am watching over my word to perform it. And then Paul in Corinthians, make love your aim and earnestly desire the spiritual gifts, especially that you may prophesy. Now, the only reason I'm reading you these is not in a charismatic way, but this is for you too. This is for you, that God is watching over your word so that you can perform it. That, and some people can take that so you can be the, we're all supposed to be prophets and saints, but he's watching over you. so that you can shed the obstacles and barriers, and you can plug into the right power source, and you can perform His word. And His word is, I will make all things new. And you can put down that mat and walk. And you can get off that corner and see again. And you can rise from the dead because you were only sleeping. You can get out of the chains. You can rectify and move on from the seven marriages or seven husbands or whatever the one woman had that he goes, I don't even know who your husband is, lady. Because you had too many. But all these things can be made right. That is the beauty. And that's a key to mental health. The ancient philosophers, Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, there's several early Christian in the early churches that had kind of the same ideas and philosophies, that music can soothe the soul. Nature, they looked at that as medicine, not as just some quaint adjunct, something to make you feel better while you're taking a bath with candles looking at Amazon, what your next purchase can be. It was true medicine, as much as binding up a broken leg was. These things are all there for us to grow, heal, and discover our spiritual abs, basically, and get a six-pack of spiritual abs. Because my physical abs they're kind of like, I'm still not really believing that they're still there. So the point is that make love your aim and earnestly desire the spiritual gifts, especially that you may prophesy. Well, what about, and that was from St. Paul. And he was talking about going out and helping the people. But look what Bikita did. Look what Josephine Bikita did. And what about prophecy to yourself? And not that you're sitting there talking to yourself and making things up about God, but that you are imbued with the Spirit and that you're released. Anxiety, depression. You need your good counselors. You need your good outlets. You need friends. You need touchstones. If you don't have a friend and you don't have, and you're really isolated, there's always a priest. And you might be rejected by a couple priests. They may look too busy. They don't have time for you. There's always someone. There's a volunteer situation. You can go into volunteers, and you may not like what they do. Sometimes they go, oh, we have enough. Say, well, hey, do you have somebody that sweeps the floor? Because you're always going to end up talking to somebody. And when you do, sometimes they might irritate you, sometimes they're not. But they're always angels. There is always Jesus in disguise. So it's really important for you to know that your core exists. And for you to be who you are in this moment with a seeking heart. If you weren't seeking, you would not be logged on to Breadbox Media. Because you know we're going to give you some spiritual thoughts. You know that. And we're going to use whatever training we have in our worldly life to show you different ways to approach the same issues. So yeah, you're going to need your experts, and not just going to need them. You really should seek them out. There are good counselors out there. You might need them. There are good doctors out there. You might need them. God even says that you will probably need them. But you need to develop the core in yourself. That is a primary directive. And we'll get more into that in the next few days. I am Dr. Michelle. You have been walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live. It has been a privilege and a pleasure. God bless. See you tomorrow.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.